Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. You know the deal, if you've been listening with us before, follow us both on Twitter, please. You can reach out to me at JakeSki52, reach out to John at JonLitterine. Disagree with our picks, got a fantasy question, got a real life fight question. We are here for you. But today, we're going to be making our fantasy picks here for the biggest fights at UFC 214 here. John, before we get started too far into the card, I believe this is the best card of the year, and I don't think there's very much argument there. Can it do more than 500,000 pay-per-view eyes?
You know, that's close. I think it might be able to, mm-hmm. because you have, you know, it has three big things going for it. One is the return of Jon Jones, which I think is going to get the most publicity of everything, you know, that goes on during the event. You have three title fights, which you rarely see. You know, we'll see cards when you get two, but it's not often you get three. And, you know, Cyborg on a card is a big draw. Even though she hasn't fought a lot of, I don't want to say not she's fought talented opponents, but not a lot of name, you know, big name opponents. And she has the ability to help drive the number by herself. So, like you said, this is by far the best card of the year, not even close. The last, I would say, looking at it, about eight fights, the last eight fights on this card are absolutely exceptional. And I wouldn't be surprised, unfortunately, you know, I don't say unfortunately, but if we don't see another card all year with the depth of this one.
I think they're coming out to your neck of the woods in New York later on in the year, maybe November. That's not confirmed yet. So maybe they try to stack something up here, but I think you're very right. It's going to get a lot of buzz because, I mean, without Conor McGregor active in the UFC, without Ronda Rousey, her career's pretty much done. Jon Jones was the biggest star in the entire sport before them, and I think he can ascend back to that ranking. The only thing that jeopardizes, like, the 500,000 number I threw out there, I just pulled that off an arbitrary kind of odds set to get that odds website to get that over under. The only threat to that is could be people saving their money for Mayweather McGregor, or the fact that people maybe bought UFC 213 and were disappointed. But 213 only did about 150,000 pay-per-view buys. So, you know, maybe the UFC is not buzzing as much, and that might make it a little bit of a challenge. But I think it can approach 500,000. I'm pretty confident we'll see 400,000.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this not only is it a good card, but it has a lot of fights and fighters that resonate with casual fans, not just the hardcore MMA fans. There are a lot of fighters who are big names and, you know, thus will get play, a lot of play and talk on, you know, ESPN and places like that. And that's the kind of thing that drives pay-per-view buys. Like, take a guy like Demetrius Johnson, who is probably the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, but doesn't draw big numbers, and thus you see him fighting on big Fox cards and things like that. So, they're not only good fights, but they're big name fighters, and they're big name fighters for casual fans. And that's what drives pay-per-view numbers.
Yeah, absolutely, John. Well, let's dive right in here to the main event here. Always kicking off with the top one that most folks are going to be tuning in here. We have a light heavyweight championship fight between Daniel Cormier, the reigning champion, and John Jones. At one point, we mentioned biggest star in the sport. At one point, was considered the best pound-for-pound fighter, and I think he can start to reclaim that. But before we dive into that, DraftKings salaries have Jones as a pretty big favorite. Jones is 8,900 on DraftKings. Cormier is 7,300. Jones is minus 270 in terms of betting odds. Cormier plus 220. So they match up relatively in line with the DraftKings salaries here. The first time these two men fought, it was fought to a decision, and Jones won. Right now, the odds to finish in this fight are plus 130, so Vegas is giving this fight going to a decision a slight edge here. John, how do you see this one playing out?
A lot like that, a lot of what you just mentioned, and a lot like the first one. The first fight, like you said, went the whole 25 minutes. It was a clear victory for John Jones. Daniel Cormier did some damage, had his moments, but certainly never had Jones in any real legitimate trouble. And I know you agree with me when we say the only person who really at this point seems like he can screw things up for John Jones is himself. Mm-hmm. He's become, as everybody knows his story, he's become hard to rely on. You know, it's difficult to rely on a guy when he's having his title yanked and, you know, all the things that have been going on and stuff. But I'm not the least bit worried that John Jones is going to show up in shape, ready to fight.
I mean, you could see him during the press conference the other way. DC's coming after him, calling him a junkie. He lifts up his shirt and goes, "Does this look like a junkie to you?" And he looks like he's in just as good, if not better, shape than his run as UFC championship.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be in shape. He's 30 years old, so, you know, the time off, it's not like he's a 37-year-old guy who all the time off and all the few fight is going to have an impact. He's going to show up ready to go. And not that he wouldn't show up ready to go anyway, but, you know, the fact he doesn't like DC and there is legitimate blood between the two, you know, I think is even more of, not a reason, but I mean, is even more so to believe that, you know, he's going to be ready to fight. And
yeah, absolutely. Well, let's take a look at this one from a little bit of a technical standpoint here. Now, Cormier has always been able to control fights using his wrestling, but he's coming up against a guy like John Jones, who has superb takedown defense, and in addition to that, just a very large, a 5-inch height and a 12-inch reach advantage. How do you see that going in his favor?
That's the biggest issue. John Jones's toughest test in the UFC was this fight against Alexander Gustafsson. And the reason it was his toughest fight is because he was facing an opponent who fights a lot like he does. A big, tall guy with a long reach who could stand away from him and still kick him and still punch him and connect. Now, DC, like you said, giving up 5 inches in height, giving up 12 inches in reach. The only way Cormier is going to be able to consistently strike with Jones is in tight to his body, you know, short jabs, clinches along the fence, things like that. And as you mentioned, DC is a wrestler first and foremost. It's where he makes his name. It's where he makes his money. But he's facing a guy who not only is bigger and stronger than him, but is just he's freakishly strong, John Jones is, from an athletic standpoint. His takedown defense in his career in the UFC is just about 95%, which...
He's only been taken down twice UFC career, once by Cormier and once in that Gustafson fight.
Yep, it's as good... he has as good takedown defense as you will see. And DC went 1-for-8 on takedowns in the first fight between the two, and that's just not going to be good enough. Cormier is not a, you know, not a real finisher in the sense that, you know, like a guy like Rumble Johnson who, you know, can clip you with one punch and, you know, you're going to bed. That's not DC's game. And this, you know, and I hope if Jones does win, I hope this doesn't take away from Cormier's legacy that he can't beat Jones. And, you know, that means he's not a good fighter. Look, the guy's 38 years old, he turned 38 in March, and he's still one of the, certainly one of the best lightweight fighters in the world, probably the second best, we would say, behind Jones. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the best fighters in the world, period.
I think even if he loses, you could make a case for him still being a top five, even pound-for-pound fighter on the roster.
Because
Jones top and DC 10. Put one at three, one at five, and there you go.
Top 10, easy. And there's, you know, I guess my point is there's no shame in losing to John Jones, who is, you know, if John Jones keeps his head on straight, and, you know, doesn't keep getting suspended and everything that's going on, you know, he already is, but he certainly could easily go down as one of the two or three best fighters in the history of the sport. He is that talented. So I think this fight's going to play out a lot like the first one. You know, I know DC says a lot. I know DC's been saying a lot of things in the interviews, but I don't really see any reason that this is gonna finish any differently than the first one. I think it will probably last the whole 25 minutes, but the way to go about beating Jones, if you can, is to do what Gustafson did. And Cormier just does not have that body type.
Doesn't
he's not
have
tall.
The physical tools for that.
No, yeah, he's just you know, he doesn't have long limbs, and it's just really, really hard to not only face a guy with the talent and the background and the wrestling background and everything that Jones has, but a guy who, on top of everything else, is just a freak athlete. He has athletic skills that you can't teach. So I think this is going to go a lot like the first one. And if it does, that's no knock on Cormier. I think that's just Jones being good as opposed to anything Cormier is going to do wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick before we move on, I want to throw a quick DraftKings spin on this. You know, they say that you really want to cover yourself in the main event in DFS a lot of times. Say you made 5 DraftKings lineups. Would you use DC in any?
Yeah, you could, because it's, you know, you're not going to – there are, like you said, you have a guy here who might be one of, even if he loses, you know, top 10 pound fighter in the game, and he's at 7,300. That's an awful low salary for a guy with DC's talent level.
Yeah.
So,
and,
you know.
We'll get to Cyborg later, but if you want to get fighters like that in, those big favorites, you have to sacrifice somewhere, and there's not going to be a ton of lineups with both Jones and Cyborg in it. Because
it's very rare.
It's those two, and then you got to pick 4 dogs, which is tough.
Yeah. It's very rare you'll ever, you know, I would say what, maybe every 7, 8, 9 cards, you know, not common, you see a fighter of DC's caliber with such a low salary. You know, he's an underdog for a reason. He's facing, you know, one of the best fighters of his generation. So the number is understandable, but it's not often that you get a fighter so talented with such a low salary. And, you know, there's room for profit there. Is it unlikely that he's going to win? Yeah. And, you know, that's why the odds and the salaries are at that number. But, you know, I don't think there's anyone in the world who would be 100% shocked if, you know, someone with the talent of Cormier pulled off an upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So maybe at least one out of those 5 just to kind of make sure you don't take a complete loss on that night if something happens and it doesn't go Jones' way here. But, John, let's move on to the co-main. We've got another exciting title fight, the welterweight championship between Tyron Woodley and Damian Maia is the challenger. Maia, certainly, he's on a massive win streak. He definitely deserves this opportunity. But he's a betting underdog. He's a plus 170 underdog, while Woodley finds himself a minus 210 favorite. Woodley's 8,700 on DraftKings, so a little bit cheaper than Jones. And Damian Maia is 7,500 on DraftKings. The odds to finish on this one, actually, Vegas really does like this one to finish. It's at minus 350. It's almost as if they think either Woodley's getting the knockout or Maya's going to submit him. this is probably the cheapest salary you'll ever get Damian Maia at, but what do you think, what do you make of his chances against the champion Tyron Woodley?
Not great. Much like Jones, much like DC seems like a bad matchup for John Jones, this to me seems like a bad matchup for Maia. And, you know, I admit Maia has been better, far better of late than, you know, anyone, myself especially, could have predicted. You know, it looked for a while, not all that long ago, that, you know, he might be done. And, you know, since then he's run off 7 wins in a row against big names, Carlos Condit, Jorge Masvidal, Gunnar Nelson, Neil Magny. So he's earned this shot. But it's always tough, especially from a DraftKings and fantasy perspective, it's always tough to bet on a guy who makes his living with submissions, because it's a lot harder to get into position to clamp on a submission than it is to land one big punch. So, you know, there's no doubt Mai is giving up a ton of power to Woodley. You know, Woodley is the bigger, stronger guy. And, you know, Maia is 4 inches taller, but it's Woodley with the 2-inch reach advantage. So,
It looks like, just looking at the face-off, it looks like Maya's a much, much bigger man, but realistically, the reach is, you know, almost equivalent. So, it's definitely something to watch out for.
It is. And, you know, Maya's takedown, Maya's been in the UFC forever. His takedown defense is 65%. That's not a very good number. They're probably below average, actually, but. You know, I think Woodley would be happy. Woodley's background is in wrestling, but I think Woodley would be happy to keep this fight on the feet.
Mm-hmm. And he'll be able to do it. His takedown defense on his own is 91%. People think of Woodley, you know, standing up and kickboxing with Stephen Thompson, or he got the belt from Robbie Lawler when he knocked him out, and they think of him for his power. But he's got really good wrestling skills, and a takedown defense like that is certainly not common in the UFC. You know, we mentioned Bones at 95%. That's like almost an anomaly, but Woodley 91%. It's an excellent takedown defense, and for Maia to get this fight on the ground, or if he ever wants a chance to take his back, it's going to be very tough sledding.
Extremely. And I mean, just, you know, going to the ground with Damian Maia, even if you're the one initiating the takedowns, it is asking for trouble. Maya's a, you know, world-class BJJ black belt. Letting him fight on the ground, even if it's off his back, it is a mistake. So the only, not even a concern, but the only thing I would keep an eye on with Woodley here is he's facing a guy who is, last two fights you mentioned, he fought Wonderboy Thompson. He's facing a guy here in Damian Maia who, it, you know, couldn't be any different of a type fight Wonderboy tried. They're total opposites. Wonderboy, a pure kickboxer, striker, you know, Maia, ground specialist. So the only thing I would keep an eye on with Woodley is, you know, how does he react to, you know, facing someone who is a different kind of opponent? Because when you think about it, other than his two fights against Wonderboy, you know, his last, he fought Robbie Lawler in July 2016, about a year ago. And again, Robbie Lawler, pretty much a striker at this point when he won his title. So, you know, you're going, you know, upwards of two and a half years since Tyron Woodley's faced anyone who doesn't really make his living as a striker. So, you know, he's facing a different kind of opponent here in Maia, but I think he's going to be okay. The only thing I will say is, as you mentioned, odds to finish are minus 350. I think that's a bit of a high number. I'd probably have it closer to, minus 200, minus 225. I think this fight might go a little longer than people think, but I like Woodley, and I understand why he's a favorite. But, you know, if nothing else, Damian Maia has more than earned this opportunity.
Yeah, John, both you and I do like Woodley in this fight, and I like him for a lot of the same reasons that you mentioned, but just wanted to note that there is a little bit of dissension among the MMA staff. We've got three of us taking Maia and three of us taking Woodley, so maybe there'll be a little bit of separation in the records this year this week for staff picks, and hopefully you and I are on the right side here. But like I said at the beginning, this, if you're a Damian Maia fan or you really have been able to appreciate what he's done so far, this is probably the cheapest DraftKings salary you're going to get him at ever, because if he becomes champion, he'll be more expensive, or if he has to fight his way back up, he'll be favorites, you know, depending on how long he wants to continue. So definitely, yeah, I don't know, maybe something to look at. He's another one of those where maybe I'd toss him in one lineup just to cover the base there, or one or two, because he's not quite, the odds aren't quite as separated as badly as the main event.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing which we just mentioned, Maia and Cormier, is even though they're underdogs and we both think they're underdogs and we don't think they're going to win, they're both such talented fighters that you can't just dismiss them outright.
And that's what makes it such a great card.
Yeah. There's a lot of it, and there's a lot of even the fighters who are underdogs, you can make arguments for a lot of them as to, you know, if maybe not why they might not win, but why they're decent plays. And you don't always get that on every card, and there's a lot of it here.
Yep. And they're 5-round fights, and Maya can get fantasy points from his grappling and passing guard and stuff like that. So, you know, there's always an option or an opportunity there to hit value in terms of fantasy points there. But John, let's move on to the third, and yes, you guys all heard me right, the third title fight on this card Saturday. And this is a big one because, you know, we had Jermaine Durandamy, that whole saga with the women's featherweight division. She was eventually stripped of her belt after refusing to fight Cyborg. And after making a mess out of this whole situation for almost the first 6 months of the women's featherweight division here, the UFC is finally getting it right, taking the belt from Durandamy and letting Chris Cyborg fight for the title. She will be taking on Tanya Evinger, and of course, as one would expect in any Cyborg fight, she is a massive favorite. She's 9,600 on DraftKings, one of the higher salaries you'll ever see since they moved down to six fighters. Evinger is just 6,600, so she's probably not much more of a punt play. I don't see the ownership being high even at that price. And betting wise, we're looking at Cyborg. You know, she started around a -1200 favorite, but I'm seeing her now more close to a -1375 favorite, so more money is coming in on her. Tanya Evinger sits around +850. I mean, the odds to finish here, -1175, just absolutely crazy. Vegas pretty much expects this one to end in a Cyborg finish. Is there any way Evinger can pull this off, or will we just be happy if she makes it out of the first or second round?
I think the latter. You know, what's great about this sport is anybody can beat anybody any night. But this is an awful tall ask. It's really, really hard to put someone in your lineup who has a $9,600 salary. We almost always advocate, if you're going to use someone like Cyborg here who has such a hefty salary, that you make multiple lineups because, you know, God forbid she walks across the cage, takes one step and blows her knee out or something, your lineup and your chance of winning anything is essentially sunk. Because you have so much money dedicated to one person. But and Tanya Evinger is a really good fighter. A pros pro, has been fighting a long time, made her professional debut more than a decade ago, has fought a lot of big names, Sarah McMahon, Alexis Davis, Gina Carano, Julie Kedzie. She's been in there with, you know, the best the sport has to offer. For a long time.
And can I just say that she's stepping in on relatively short notice? It's a shorter camp for her because this was originally supposed to be Chris Cyborg against Megan Anderson, and of course Megan Anderson had to step out for some undisclosed personal reasons. I'm sure we'll eventually see that fight down the road, but Evinger's stepping in to save this part of the card and get Cyborg an opponent, so you got to hand it to her for that at least.
Yeah, you do, and she's actually, for those who don't know, Tanya Evinger has, over the years, turned down the UFC's advances, stated she was happy in Invicta, all that. And you were right when you mentioned earlier, UFC has handled this women's featherweight division poorly.
I mean, the fact that Cyborg wasn't in the inaugural title fight and that they went with Holly Holm and Jermaine Durandamy, that's just a botch from the beginning. But they're finally making it right here.
They've handled Cyborg in general poorly.
Making her do all those catchweight fights at 140. I mean, I think that's a good point that needs to be brought up here. She's had some of the most brutal weight cuts of her life to get to these arbitrary catchweights, and 5 pounds may not seem like a lot, but when you're only dealing with 145 to start with, trust me, it's a lot.
It's a lot, and you have a fighter in Evinger who has been fighting at bantamweight. So you have Evinger moving up 10 pounds here. And you have Cyborg, who, obviously, as you just mentioned, walks around considerably bigger than 100.
If they ever did a women's lightweight, they wouldn't, because there wouldn't be enough fighters, but Cyborg would be holding multiple belts.
Easily. I mean, my guess is, and this is just a guess, I would guess she walks around at least 165, I would guess. Mm-hmm. She has that much muscle on her frame. Yeah. So
I'd estimate it about the same way.
She, you know, this is, the odds to finish are so insane because of her power. She hits twice as hard as anyone in the division, and until I see otherwise, I'm kind of the mind that this is one of those where she's going to walk in, just charge every opponent in front of her, and that's going to be the end of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually, just like we thought, everybody thought for a while, nobody could beat Ronda Rousey. Eventually somebody's going to get in there and they're going to pull off a huge upset. It's going to happen eventually, but anyone guessing or trying to come up with, you know, a valid reason as to when and where that's going to happen is simply impossible.
Yeah, absolutely. And Cyborg, she's just 32, so there's a couple years at least of her prime left for a fight fans.
And Avenger is 36.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like she's facing, you know, Megan Anderson is much younger than that. So,
yeah, I almost think it's better for Megan Anderson to wait a little while to fight Cyborg, get some more octagon time under her belt, hone her skills a little bit more.
When the time comes, but, mm-hmm. you know, any experience, you know, can only help.
All right, so, I do want to say this about Cyborg. Now, keep in mind that these numbers I'm about to throw out are before kind of DraftKings expanded to six fighters. But her first UFC fight, Cyborg, was $13,000 was her salary against Lena Landsberg. She was a minus 1,200 favorite. She scored 134 DraftKings points. All right, and she's a bigger favorite now, keep in mind, against Leslie Smith. The closing line had her at about a minus 2,000 favorite. She was 11,600, and she scored 116 DraftKings points. Now, she's about a minus 1,375 favorite. She's 9,600, and I know there's a little bit of salary adjustment going on there, but I feel like 9,600 is actually a fair price. It does make it tougher to get you several balanced favorites in a balanced lineup, but in a tournament lineup, I think that 130-point potential is actually kind of a good deal for 9,600, and you won't hear me say that with these wild salaries all the time, but I think this is one of the cases where it's better than most.
It is, and, you know, she's a finisher, and it's one thing, like, Demetrius Johnson beats everybody, but usually takes him the entire 25 minutes to beat everybody.
So he would receive a salary over 9,000 very rarely, unless he's fighting someone like stepping in late and unranked.
Cyborg has, you know, been in two UFC fights and they've lasted under 4 minutes. And the only reason they lasted that long is because the two opponents she faced, you know, took a beating and a half before it was finally stopped.
Mm-hmm. They hung in there. I'll give them that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this is straightforward. And like I said, one of these days, someone's going to, you know, step in there with her mm-hmm. and shock the world, or at least last longer than most people think. But there's no rhyme or reason as to when it's going to happen. And it's really hard. Even if you don't want to pick Cyborg or put her in your lineup because her salary is so high, I just see no reason to use Avenger at all.
Yeah, it's essentially punting the fight. I mean, maybe you might be able to get five modest favorites. So we don't advocate doing this on DraftKings. It limits your upside in tournaments. But if you were to use them both in your lineup, knowing you're going to take tiny amount of points from Avenger and get a lot of points from Cyborg, I can see that passing off as a strategy. I'd save that more for cash games or head-to-heads than I would for tournaments, because it takes one person out of the running in tournaments and makes it highly unlikely that you take it down with a lineup like that. But no, I do agree that that Cyborg, there's a spot for her on DraftKings, especially in those tournaments where you go with a little more of a stars and scrubs approach, they call it.
Yep. It's straightforward, and, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to happen, but what everybody's saying, you know, and everybody thinks is going to happen, there's a reason for that. So, you know, we'll have to see, but Cyborg's a deserving favorite.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to another fight. It's not a title fight, John, but it is certainly deserving of a spot on the pay-per-view card. It'd probably be a main event on just about any UFC on Fox or UFC Fight Night card they've done all year long, but these guys are built for pay-per-view with good reason. I'm talking about the welterweight matchup between Robbie Lawler and Donald Cerrone. Lawler comes in as a pretty big favorite. He's 8,500, Cerrone 7,700 on DraftKings. Lawler minus 160 betting favorite, Cerrone plus 135 underdog. So the odds in this case are a little bit tighter than what the DraftKings salary is in terms of margin overall here. Odds to finish are minus 130. John, this is a very, it's very much a fight of the night candidate here. How do you see this one playing out?
I think this is going to be an action fight, as you just mentioned. Two guys who love to stand and bang, guys who hit hard, guys who fight a lot. And the reason I picked Robbie Lawler straightforward is that I'm just worried about what I've seen from Cowboy as far as how much damage he's taken. And I'm a little worried about what I've seen from his chin of late. It's not holding up like it used to. And part of that could simply be getting up there in age. Now 34 years old, fights all the time, as we all know. The only way you're really going to keep him, you know, out of the cage is through injury. If he's too banged up. He's taken about 6 months off. And
that's as long as you're ever going to see from him. He was supposed to be on UFC 213, but that fight got pushed back. Was dealing with a groin injury and a staph infection. Supposedly healthy at this time, though.
Yeah, that 6 months is about as max. Cowboy lost to Jorge Masvidal in January, got knocked out. But even in December, in his fight before that against Matt Brown, he won that fight with a great head kick, but he got beat up pretty good in that fight as well. Brown, who doesn't move a lot and is very straightforward in as far as his striking style, hit him really, really hard and really, really often. And fighting someone, if you're getting hit hard and you're getting hit often, fighting Robbie Lawler is not a good idea.
I 100% agree, and we talked about the layoff a little bit due to injury, and I'm not entirely convinced that he is at 100% right now, because he'll definitely get in his own way by fighting when he maybe shouldn't be in the first place. But you talked about the multiple injuries that he was dealing with that pushed the fight off. That fight was just I believe it was mid July, July 8th maybe, I think, was UFC 213, and now we're looking at 214, and the injuries were enough to push the fight off then. We're only looking at a couple extra weeks of time, so I'm not entirely convinced that Cerrone's at 100%, and that then mixed with the reasons that you mentioned, Lawler is a guy who's going to take you to war, and he's not someone that you want to face when you're maybe at less than 100%. So for these reasons, I'm picking Lawler. I'm right there with you, and not only that, I think Lawler's one of the better bets on the whole card.
I'm worried about what I've seen from Cowboy lately, and the only way he's ever going to step aside or fight less is if he's not healthy. And like you said, not much of a difference between the last card where they were supposed to fight and this one where they are fighting. So I think Lawler is the pick, if for no other reason than I think he's far more likely to to last than Cowboy is, based on what we've seen lately. Yeah. So,
and don't get us wrong, Lawler's been in some wars. He's been back-to-back fight of the years against Carlos Condit and Rory McDonald, where he definitely took a punishment, a big-time punishment. Of course, he won them both, but I think about 12 months off for Lawler? I think that's actually going to really do him good this time.
So I'm a little over 11 by the time of the fight. So, you're right, about a year, a little over a year. It'll be a good fight, and if nothing else, I think it's going to be, obviously, should be extremely entertaining. Two guys who don't know how to fight any other way.
Absolutely. So, it's going to be fan-friendly. Fight of the night candidate. There's a lot of those.
And, if you think Cowboy's struggles of late are simply more of fluky and, he just had a couple bad matchups or whatever, then, $7,700 for another, again, $7,700 is a low price for another talented fighter. So, we like Lawler, but again, a low price for a good, real good fighter.
Yeah, this is actually another one of the fights where the RotoWire MMA staff is split 3-3, three for Lawler, three for Cerrone. Of course, you and I see eye to eye on this one, but there's definitely some dissension among the staff. So, maybe he's not a bad DraftKings play. Although I do think Lawler is one of the better bets on the card here. But to round out the pay-per-view, John, we've got a light heavyweight matchup here between Jimmy Manuwa and Volkan Ozdemir. This is a fight that I feel like Dana put on the card just in case something maybe happened with the Jones and DC fight, as it has shown to do in the past here. But, I'm knocking on wood here. This is it is Thursday at about almost 6 o'clock Central Time, and we're not quite, and there hasn't been any news yet, so we're going to sweat that out here. But anyway, back to this fight. This is a good fight to kick off the pay-per-view card, because there's definitely a potential for a lot of fireworks between these two men. Jimmy Manuwa's just been on a knockout tear. He's demolished everything in his way, with the exception of Anthony Rumble Johnson. Manuwa sits at 8,800 on DraftKings. Ozdemir sits at 7,400 on DraftKings, but this is another case where the salary margin seems to be a lot more than the odds margin. The betting odds have Manua as a minus 180 favorite. Ozdemir is a plus 150 dog. This is another one I mentioned, fireworks. We've got a minus 485 odds to finish here. So, I mean, it's a great fight to kick off this pay-per-view. Also a good insurance policy for the UFC. Do you think Manua takes care of business?
I do, and two main reasons. One is I think he hits harder. Big, strong guy who, quite honestly, does little other than strike, really. That's where he is most comfortable. And the biggest difference, other biggest difference for me between the two is, I think a lot of, Ozdemir's success is small sample size. Mm-hmm. Two fights in UFC, a decision win against Ovin Singh Preux in February, which...
A split decision, mind you.
A lot of people actually think OSP might have won that fight. Mm-hmm. And
Manua finished OSP, so they have a common opponent that we can go with.
And his 28-second knockout of Misha Cirkunov in May, whenever it was kind of a, if I remember correctly, a short shot up against the fence when it looked like Cirkunov was in good shape and messed up Cirkunov's equilibrium, and he went down and it was over.
It was a little fluky, but it did also show that he has a good amount of power in his hands, that he can land a shot that maybe isn't flush and still rattle you a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, but Manoa, back-to-back performance of the night wins for his KOs of OSP and Corey Anderson. Only two losses of his career, Rumble Johnson, as you mentioned, and Alexander Gustafsson. So, you're facing a guy who the only setbacks he's ever had are against, the elite of the elite of the elite of the division. So, again, this is, I guess you would say this is more of an educated guess than anything else. I just think Manoa hits harder, and, when you're trying to find, what you've seen in the past as far as, time spent in the octagon and quality of opponents faced and things like that, I think Manoa is a smart play here. But again, he's facing a guy in Ozdemir with a lot of power, who obviously has proven that, he can knock out big, strong guys with one punch, and at 7,400, a low salary. So if you feel, you're really confident in putting, John Jones or Cyborg in your lineup or whatever, and you need to get a value play in there somewhere.
Get some salary relief.
Yeah, this is a good option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And John, I'm going to agree with you in a sense where most logic would dictate that this is Jimmy Manoa's fight to lose, the role that he's been on and his knockout ability. But for none other reason than I got to pick an upset and I love his price, I'm going to go with Ozdemir on this fight here, and I know very well that could backfire on me, and I almost half expected to a little bit, but I'm going to go out on a limb and think that the short power that he's shown in his hands in a small sample size might be able to translate here, and he might be able to sneak up on Jimmy Manoa and shock a lot of people in this fight. So I'm going with him, and I know I commented on your article this week on your preview asking, for the most part, we like favorites on this card, at least in the pay-per-view portion here. I asked you who the livest underdog was, and you told me Ozdemir, and that further cemented, to get another great MMA mind here to back me up on that. That was enough for me to go with Ozdemir in this fight.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely, it's not a big salary for a guy who has pop. And, there are a lot of favorites, a lot of favorites in this card who we like to win, but a lot of underdogs who you can make the case that score really good plays, and this is another one of those.
Yeah, absolutely here. So speaking of underdogs, value plays, however you want to call it, you're setting a fantasy lineup. Say you do want to use Cyborg and Bones, or you want to pick two of these favorites that we like as well. How are you going to level out your lineup here? Do you have any value plays jump out at you?
There are a couple that I like, and the two that stand out to me the most is one is Henan Barao. And Barao has had struggles at bantamweight because he's had problems with weight cutting. This is 140-pound catch weight, which is odd, but
it's the California State Athletic Commission. He's had previous troubles getting to weight and like a really scary weight cuts in California before. So they simply wouldn't sanction this at 135. And hats off to Sterling for saying, okay, I'll still fight you at 140. But that gives him a pretty severe disadvantage, I would think.
But it certainly doesn't help. And Pettenbrow, which no one really ever talks about these days, is not all that long ago was considered widely to be one of the best, you know, 3, 4, 5 pound for pound fighters in the world.
Mm-hmm. So scaled things back of late, but he's gone toe to toe with some of the best.
Oh yeah, long time. And for all those our listeners who don't think 5 pounds makes that big a difference, I probably would have picked Sterling if this fight was at bantamweight. Mm-hmm. But you know, the extra 5 pounds and just not having to drain that out of your body is a big, big difference.
It's going to help your cardio. It's just going to help your overall well-being. I think it's just Barao is a good pick in this because he's going to give you that salary relief that you need too. We're talking about that earlier, and I was kind of shocked when I saw these salaries. Barao $7,800, Sterling $8,400. So, you know, $600 difference gives you $533 less than the average per fighter you're allotted, and that lets you do some things with your lineups.
Yep, he's a good play given his talent level and the fact that this fight is out of catch weight. And the other play that I really like that I'm a little surprised is so low is Brian Ortega, mm-hmm. undefeated as a professional, very, very strong grappler, one of the best ground specialists, certainly in the division and really in the best UFC, underrated. BJJ black belt, really, really strong fighter. And he's facing a guy here in Renato Moicano who has kind of come out of nowhere to win his first three UFC fights and decision the very tough Jeremy Stephens in his last fight in April. But I like Ortega. Ortega is a California native, so he'll have the crowd behind him here. And Southern California kid, so he's another good value. Like, it's a good card where you could make arguments for even the underdogs that they can win and why they're good plays, and that makes for a good card. And I think other than Tanya Evinger, which it's seems unlikely that she'll win, but the final eight cards of the night, the final eight fights of the night. The five on the pay-per-view, and then the final three on the undercard are all exceptional fights where cases can be made for both guys. And there's a lot of value in this card, a lot more than you would see in other cards because the depth is there and the quality of fighters is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from with Ortega, the hometown guy. He's been an excellent fighter. I do think Renato Moicano's been able to do, he does maybe cancel out some of his strengths at the same time, which is why I think that the salaries are the way they are. But if you're a few hundred dollars to move around with, I definitely see throwing Ortega in the lineup. I also think Andre Feely is a decent play. He's 9,200 and he's going against someone making their UFC debut. Of course, this is supposed to be Doo Hoo Choi. Imagine if we saw that fight on this card, it'd be even crazier. But Andre Feely is 9,200. So if you want to try to zig when other people are zagging, you could fade Cyborg and go with someone like Feely. Count on a bigger stoppage and then maybe get some value there. So that's something to go with. The other fight I kind of want to focus in on as far as DraftKings, because I think the ownership's going to be high and it's important to get this right, is the FS1 prelims finale between Ricardo Lamas and Jason Knight. You're talking about fireworks. I think this is a sleeper fight of the year candidate, and I see a lot of people talking up Jason Knight. He's been able to do some great things since entering the UFC, but Lamas is such a tough test that has faced all of the best featherweights here. I mean, do you have a favorite in this one, or is this too close to even put in your lineup?
It's really close. I pick Lamas, but there's a reason. Everything is so close on this one. Salaries are exactly the same at 8,100. Mm-hmm. Going back and forth. Both guys right around
It's essentially a pick'em. Yeah, Knight is actually, the money's moved towards him a little bit. I'm looking at minus 120 to minus 130 for him, whereas Lamas is plus 130. Or, I'm sorry, Lamas is plus 100. So he's even. You can hardly make any money on that. And there's even some sports books that, you know, look at these websites that put them all side by side. At least one sports book has this fight as a pick'em. So very, very interesting.
Yeah, should be a good, fast-paced fight. You know, Ricardo Lamas, as I said for a while, underrated. You know, really, really good guy. Struggled against the best fighters.
You know, your Max Holloways, of course.
Yep, but other than...
Almost lasted as long as Aldo did against Holloway. Not quite, though.
Yeah, other than the top guys, you know, he's right there on that second level. Mm-hmm. So, Jason Knight... up-and-coming guy, you know, making his name with the company. So a good
gatekeeper kind of fight to really test Knight to see if he can keep rising those ranks.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, even if Knight is so young, you know, as far as his time with the company, that even if he loses, if he puts on a tough competitive fight and lasts a while, and, you know, that obviously it's not as good as a win, but it's not crushing. So, you know, he'll get his chance. But you're right. This is a good fight. You know, you don't want to throw him in there with a champion, but this is a good fight to see how far Knight's really come.
Yeah, absolutely. Here. So on that note here, before we wrap up, we always kind of end by, bringing out the fan in us a little bit by seeing what fight we're most excited for. Who fills that requirement for you?
It's going to be a lousy answer, but I think it's the Jones and the Cormier fight, only because of the bad blood for me. I mean, I know a lot of it is posturing and a lot of it is an act, but I don't know if anybody saw the Jones, the sit down Brian Stan had with him on the Fox card from Long Island the other day. You know, when he got up at the end and ripped the mic off and walked out, to me, it looked really staged and really fake. But, but there's no doubt it's two guys who really, really don't like each other. And I think that adds an element to the, other than the fact it's obviously the two best fighters in the division and Jones is coming back, I think that adds an element of entertainment to a fight where, you know, as opposed to, you know, you have a fight with two guys who like each other and get along and, you know, are going to shake hands after, you know, these guys, no matter what happens, are not going to be friends on Saturday night when this is over.
I would not expect them to touch gloves.
I'd be surprised.
I would be quite surprised. And hey,
they're not going to be friends when the fight's over. You know, they said
they'll bury the hatchet. Yeah, I don't think so. I think too much was said there.
I think they respect each other's ability inside the cage, but they just don't like each other.
They don't have to like each other. Yes. Yeah, so I mean, that's definitely my answer too. I got to go with those guys. But hey, I want to throw honorable mentions here for that Lawler Cerrone fight that we talked about earlier. We talk about fireworks, we're going to have that. And, of course, we just touched on the Lamas and Jason Knight fight. You know, Knight's going to come out swinging. Both of those are, you know, if it's not DC Bones getting fight of the night, I would guess it's going to be one of those two.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of action. Should be, you know, not this is not going to be a card, we don't think, where guys, you know, very slow pace fights. That's not what this is. So
nope, this is the best product the UFC can put out at this point in time. You know, minus the Rousey McGregor that, you know, they might not ever be able to use them to their full potential moving forward. But very excited for it, John.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Really appreciate having you on, breaking down these cards. Of course, you can check John out on Twitter at JonLitterine. You can follow me on Twitter at JakeSki52. John, it's going to be a while till we're back next. We mentioned Johnson's selling power, but he's going to take on Ray Borg in a main event all the way on September 9th. We've got Mayweather McGregor to thank for that.
Yeah, you know, we got two pay-per-views in what, you know, 3.5 weeks, and now we got a little over a month until another one, but we'll talk to you then.
All right, sounds good. Take it easy.
Thank you.